Welcome to International Tax Bites, a series of conversations around issues and concepts in international taxation. I'm Graham Jackson, and I'm a Gibraltar and English solicitor with Hassan's International Law Firm in Gibraltar. Today, I will be speaking to my podcast partner, Harriet Brown, who is a Jersey advocate and English barrister with Old Square Tax Chambers in London. So, Harriet, here we are.
Here we are again.
So we've got another episode. We've got a fantastic guest. Some people will remember him. So we've got Todd Buell again, who is law. Go on.
No, just I was just going to agree with what a fantastic guest Todd is, because I realised I was nodding away and we're audio only. So
yeah,
not very helpful.
It's always good to remember that we're audio only.
We've only been doing what, 3 years?
3 years, yeah. So Todd, if you remember, and if you don't remember, then I'll tell you, is the Law 360 Brussels tax correspondent. He has his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the EU. He came to talk to us several months ago about developments in the EU, and he's back to give us a roundup of 2023 and to see where we're going in the future. So shall we just ask him the first topic on our list?
Yes.
So, Todd, the Unshell Directive, which just for the listeners to remember, the Unshell Directive is essentially a directive which is targeted at what the EU describe as shell companies, and what normal people call holding companies.
I always think this is a bit confusing because it's too close to shelf company.
Yeah, you've worked in tax for too long if you confuse those two things.
I don't confuse them. I just think they're very close.
Go on.
And I was just going to say what can also be confusing, maybe, or just funny, is sometimes I wonder what would you call it if a formerly Dutch Anglo large fossil fuel company had a shell company.
Nice,
thank you.
A shell, right?
Yes.
We need to work that up into a 10-minute routine. That joke,
right? How do you unshell shell?
Yeah, it's like who's on fourth and all that.
I love it.
So the Unshell Directive, last time we spoke about this, it's aimed at shell directives, shell companies, yeah. It's which are defined as essentially companies which don't have economic substance and which subcontract their general admin. So it's sort of like fiduciary type service providers have 500 companies under one roof, shared director, shared secretary. That kind of service provider is under attack here. But it's also going to catch, when you talk to the people that I talk to, it's going to catch a lot of legitimate structures and methods of working. So it's sort of run into the sand, hadn't it, last time we spoke? What's happened since?
Not a whole lot, at least in the sense of moving the legislation forward. I think we last spoke in the summer, and my understanding is that after that, the council, you know, which is the representatives of the member states, I believe they tried to separate the legislation and have part of it be, you know, let's share best practices, and then also let's talk and share information. And then in another step, it was like, let's talk about the tax consequences. And I don't remember quite all the details there, but the point is that there's been a lot of talking about this legislation. If you look at the most recent ECOFIN report, or the most recent report that the finance ministers published about the state of play on this and other tax matters,
The June one, is it?
No, this is the report that came out in December, or just a few days ago.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Sure. Yeah. If you look at that, it lists a number of meetings that they've had of negotiators, you know, representatives of the member states, and the, you know, it basically reads like, we tried this, the member states said no. We tried another thing, the member states said no, and reading between the lines, it's just sort of like they're, kind of shrugging their shoulders and like, we're not sure what to do next. But, in sort of the bureaucratic language, they say, further discussions are necessary or something. And as I was saying, they've divided it into two parts. I think one's about sharing information and maybe one's about the best practices. I think it's something like that. But the point is, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And I know we want to talk about the Belgian presidency a little bit later, maybe in the show, but it's something that the Belgian presidency has name checked, kind of. They've put it in their presidency priorities as something. They say we support the implementation of UNCHEL, but I don't see any detail really on how they want to move that forward. So it's, the upshot is it just seems stuck. After 2 years, it seems stuck in council, not going anywhere.
And of course, this is interesting, or I think this is interesting, because the EU in recent years has been quite keen on trying to move towards a tax unification, not complete unification, but definitely going in that direction. And this is almost, I think, the first significant roadblock that they've hit where member states are just saying, no, we're not into this. And I think that's interesting because we've seen something a bit similar with BEPS pillars 1 and 2 in the OECD, where everyone's sort of been on a forward momentum. And then all of a sudden, you're now getting individual jurisdictions balking at the proposals being put forward. So to me, is it potentially, or the question that occurs to me is it potentially sort of are we approaching the limits of what might be achieved in a unified manner, or do you think we're going to move this forward?
There definitely, I think, have been other cases, though, where the Commission has proposed things and the member states have blocked them. I mean, you just even have to think back in this harmonization effort that you're talking about. I mean, you just have to, the one that comes to my mind is this common consolidated corporate tax base, this three CTB, which is was the predecessor to BEFIT, which I think we want to talk about later, yeah. Right, but I mean BEFIT has come on the table because the member states said in the past, because CCCTB was unacceptable. I will say that the Commission has certainly upped its game on acronyms. that's the CCCTB is an impossible, unwieldy mouthful, and now they've changed it and repackaged it as BEFIT. They also have UNCHEL, and one we'll talk about later. Head office taxation, faster. They have these great acronyms. But they're not turning into great laws, at least not at this point.
While we're on acronyms, sorry if you've mentioned this, Graham, I don't think you did, or indeed Todd. The UNCHEL directive is also being referred to as ATAD 3, isn't it?
They don't like that, though, do they?
Well,
yeah, the Commission doesn't like it being called that. But yes, yeah, some practitioners, I understand, are referring to it as ATAD 3.
It sounds a lot less threatening.
Yeah, just in case we've got listeners who have heard of ATAD 3 but haven't come across the UNCHEL directive, are the same thing.
Todd, do you think, the difference between, the standout difference between CCCTB, which to me sounds like it's Soviet, with the three C's.
No, I thought it sounded like toothpaste.
You use very odd toothpaste. The difference between that and the pushback on that and the UNCHEL directive is, I think Harriet's touched on something proper that's true when she says it's a change. There's very little pushback on anti-avoidance measures previously, but where it's a positive change to the tax base to harmonize, there's always been a resistance to that, hasn't there? Because because that's like, you're in my territory, but if you're going to stop people cheating me, I can sell that a lot better to my voters than I'm not in charge of my fiscal policy anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what the where the certainly where the pushback on Unshelled seems to be coming from is, at least my understanding is, it's, I mean, some of it comes from small member countries, though not entirely. I mean, from what I understand, even just based on what's been said in public about the measure, which isn't all that much, you've had German officials talking about, you know, lack of clarity or an inability to define even what substance is. You've had Luxembourg, some might argue, not surprisingly, saying from the very beginning that this law goes too far. And as I was saying earlier, you have right now, yeah, just a broad disagreement about, you know, really how far this law should go and what its scope should be. And it seems like we're not moving very far. And also a question of how to say this, like, even how much member states prioritize it. I mean, extrapolating a little bit, or just, you know, I don't know, speculating a little bit, but my sense is that member states have, I guess it's just audio, but you know, kind of got my hand above my head, sort of have it up to here with Pillar 2, right? That implementing Pillar 2 is so difficult for at least some member states that you try to talk to them about Unshell, you try to talk to them about BFIT, and it's just like enough. Yeah. Now, at least this is too much. And so it doesn't mean that Unshell is kind of frozen or you know, finished forever, but it certainly means the sense I get from talking to people is that this just isn't a priority for member states right now. Although, having said that, like I said, the Belgian presidency has put it on its list of, on its policy program, but it, you know, on a one page document talking about tax policy, we don't know and won't know, I think, for another week or two, do they plan to put it on the agenda of council meetings in their, you know, presidency in their first half of the year? And if so, are they going to be saying, we want to achieve political agreement on this? That was what Spain did in their presidency that's coming to an end. They had initially said, we want to reach political agreement on this in November, but that obviously didn't happen. So we'll see to what extent the Belgian presidency has ambition on this or not.
So the question I was going to ask you, Todd, was, do you think, or to what extent do you think that this is just a little bit fatigue from having so much sort of international input into tax compared to even where we were sort of 10 years ago? Because you're not just dealing with, if you're an EU member state, you're not just dealing with EU directives, draft directives and all the rest of it. You're now dealing with stuff coming out of the OECD, potentially stuff coming out of the UN in future in greater sort of volume.
I don't know if it's necessarily the origin of the where it comes from. I've been told, I don't know if it's completely true, but my understanding is that at least in some ways, the EU is quite happy to take ideas from or agreements at the OECD level and turn them into legislation. I mean, I think we were talking about this offline earlier, you know, that what is it, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it's, you know, CRS kind of fit into the DAC legislation, and BEPS fit into ATAD, and then you have ATAD 1 and 2. And you also, of course, had Pillar 2 has turned into the minimum tax directive. I mean, I'm not sure to what extent there's an OECD connection with Unshell, but I mean, what I think is just true in general is there is, you know, an exhaustion among professionals and, you know, perhaps even among the administrations, I think, you know, certainly in smaller countries with all of this, certainly with Pillar 2. I mean, we even had a had a Spanish official, I think, say recently that was part of the reason, again, why they did not discuss BFIT in the council. That was also something that was supposed to happen in October, was a public discussion of BFIT. We're nowhere near ready for any sort of council agreement, but initially they were going to have, you know, a kind of a roundtable discussion on it, and that didn't happen. And I think part of the reason that the legislative train, as they sometimes like to call in the EU, has been so slow, you know, on BFIT, and it was already supposed to be rather slow, is that, again, people are still scrambling to get Pillar 2 in place by the end of the year.
I mean, if we stop for a second, just think about the things that we can think of the top of our heads that have happened, what, since 2016? We've done CRS. There's been the back end of FATCA implementation there. We've done DAC 7 has been floated but not implemented. We've done ATADS 1 and 2, various versions. So that, and they've mandated changes to tax law. Anything else? We don't anything. I mean, it's about one a year, right? It's about one major change a year.
And Pillar 2, did you?
And Pillar 2, yeah, Pillar 2. Yeah. So, which counts as about 10 changes.
Right, right.
And then it's really difficult for a professional to keep up with it. It's a lot of them are a lot of changes that cost a lot, but not a lot to the state. And for another reason, I had to look up what FATCA has generated in its first 10 years. And it's nowhere near the 8.8 billion that they predicted. It might not even have paid for itself from a US perspective, right? And it's impossible to work out whether it has or hasn't, because you can't work out what behaviors have been changed. You can't say, Todd wouldn't have declared it. And so therefore we've got an extra $30 from Todd. You can't predict that. So the states are at the sharp end, and they're seeing the returns cash wise. And I don't think they're seeing anything like they think it would be. I mean, DAC 6, which must have taken billions and billions of euros to implement across the whole of the European Union for the professions, has returned, I suspect, has returned hardly anything to the exchequers. I mean, I talked to our people. They've seen not very many reports. We've seen figures. Portugal's published figures. Very few countries actually publish figures. Portugal's published figures. And that was very surprising, wasn't it, Harriet, what we saw on that graph? Germany is the biggest target for tax avoidance out of Portugal, which is really odd. I thought it'd be like, I don't know, name a suspect country. You would expect it, but no, the German bar is much higher than anyone else's in the report. So it's all very odd what's happening. I don't think they're returning anywhere near the money they thought they would.
Yeah, and talking about all of these international measures, it's just made me think Pillar 2 is essentially the tax equivalent of Godwin's law, isn't it? You always end up back there. If you talk about tax for long enough, you'll end up at Pillar 2.
Okay, so this leads us nicely into our second topic, which is BFIT, which we've covered a little bit. Just to recap what that is, it's the successor to the Common Consolidated Tax Base. I think the CCCTB, which I like that version of the acronym. The CCCTB was originally designed to apply to all companies, was it? Or was it only in a limited scope?
Put me on the spot there. I want to say it was limited scope above 750, but I'm not a million, but not 100% sure. But I that's what I
can't thought. Remember exactly. But yeah, but BFIT certainly only applies to those over 750 million, right?
That's right. Though other smaller companies can choose to use it if they want.
And what it does is it gives a common consolidated corporate tax base, common definitions, European Union-wide, and irons out all of those little wrinkles that you get from the fact that Denmark does things one way and Italy does things another way and whatever. Yeah. So this, from a sovereignty perspective, if you're a Hungary or some other member state that's concerned about harmonization being an erosion of sovereignty, then this looks like the EU taking control of an element of fiscal policy, because you won't be able to give incentives to your local multi-billion pound company that you would be if you had your own tax base, right? Is that right?
I'm not sure, actually. I think there is still a certain local, there is still some sort of local control. I'd have to go back and double check that. I think it's, and I think this creates, because I remember doing some reporting on this a couple of weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And this is what I was hearing from professionals, is that because it's not really formulary apportionment and it's different from Pillar Two, even though it sort of is in the same vein as Pillar Two, and there is still like a local return to be filed after your BFIT return, that I think there still remains some local, you know, I'm sorry to remain kind of vague, but you know, I'm not a professional here. I just write about the professional.
I think what you're driving at, Todd, is that each member state can, what you do is the multinational group, each member state where the multinational group is present are allocated a percentage of the aggregated tax base, which is calculated on the basis of average of the taxable results in the previous three fiscal years. But then each member state can then adjust their allocated tax base according to national rules, calculating the profits and tax at the national corporate tax rate.
Right.
There is a national component to it. Yeah.
It's more sort of admin focused, I think, almost, isn't it? In that it gives you one common sort of way to approach it, but then
that's more like Pillar One, then, isn't it? It's apportioning an element for taxation in a specific country, and then you can do what you like with it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
In that sense, yes, I think so. Yeah,
and it's interesting, isn't it, that it's got the same threshold as Pillar Two of €750 million,
right?
But with the opt-in, so you can choose to use this account. I don't want to say accounting basis because I'm sure that's not right, but
It feels like that. I mean, without any detailed knowledge, which those who know me will realize that this is my basic approach to life. Yeah, so without any detailed knowledge, it appears then that that sort of moving towards the European Union being the base territory that then divides up within itself.
I mean, I think it's moving in that direction. But again, I would put a caveat that, again, it's just a proposal and it has to be approved, I think, unanimously by member countries. And as I was saying before, the legislative process on this was expected to move slowly and has already got off to a slow start. So my understanding is that the council will only start discussing it, if I had to give a guess, I'd say, or an educated guess, I would say it maybe in March, April, we'll see. I mean, maybe more likely March. But again, we'll have to see when, you know, Belgium puts up their you know, schedule for what they want to talk about at ECOFIN meetings. And, you know, and even then, that's just, I mean, the March discussions, I think, would just be at the level of the, you know, the bureaucrats, basically at the level of the ministry officials, not necessarily even at the level of the ministers, though again there could be a sort of initial round table among ministers, but I'm really just speculating there. I think this is what Spain wanted to do, but as presidency, but in the end didn't, for various reasons, I think involving both people's kind of focus on Pillar Two, but also I think it took a long time to even get the BFIT proposal translated in the national languages. So
So how does that compare? So how does BFIT compare to the way the states does it? Because I'm asking that because I have literally zero knowledge of how the different states within the United States divide up their income. How do they work? Do they work on a formulary approach, or is it source, or is it?
Look, I mean, I'm not a specialist on, US tax law. So I don't want to say anything that's wrong or anything. I mean, but I my understanding is that the U.S. for apportionment among the individual states, that they use formulary apportionment, because this is what the advocates of formulary apportionment like to say, you know, that it's not so radical because look, the United States uses it to, you know, divide among its states. So I think that is what the, you know, how the U.S. functions. But again, I'm not an expert on that. I'm just going by what I've read.
Okay. Right. So now you've written down on our list, not just BFIT, but BFIT adjacent.
Yes.
And both Harry and I said, what is BFIT adjacent?
Well, okay. Well, what I meant by that is there were a couple of, I would say, smaller in the sense that they didn't get as many, I don't know, our focus, and my focus was on BFIT, but there was also a measure to, I think, streamline transfer pricing interpretation in the EU that I think had its origin in the court decision from last November, I believe in the Fiat case, right? Where the court threw out the commission's finding of state aid. I think it had something to do with how, you know, how the arm's length standard was interpreted. Yeah, in Luxembourg versus the EU.
There's no standard interpretation of transfer pricing.
No standard interpretation of the arm's length principle. So I believe this is what the commission is trying to change. And then there's also this measure to make it easier for small businesses to do work across borders that I believe would allow them to file taxes only in their home jurisdiction. I think it's a little more complicated than that, but that's it in a nutshell. And they call that HOT, or, nice, you know, yes, head office taxation. So, but again, these are just, these were brought forward in a big sort of proposal dump or something. It's not a nice way of putting it, but they just unveiled all these proposals, interestingly, in Strasbourg. They did it during the time of the European Parliament plenary session in Strasbourg, and actually with less media fanfare than I was expecting. But then again, I don't know. I live in a bubble, maybe as you too, as well, maybe as your listeners do too. And I focus so much on tax policy that I forget sometimes that there's a world beyond that. And so I'm thinking this is the most, BFIT is the most significant tax policy proposal that you, the commission, have, you know, presented in, you know, arguably years. And it's done, you do it in Strasbourg along with a bunch of other things. I don't know. I found that a little strange, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to go to one of those ceremonies. I've got a vision that it's a bit like the draw for the Champions League. Lots of fanfares and people with baskets walking around and balls that have to be opened with acronyms written on them.
Yes.
We select the acronym for the consolidation directive. So I think you're probably right. They probably bundled it all up together and said, look at all these good things. You'll be happy with the thing we know you don't like because they go along with all these good things.
There may have been some element to that of making, of announcing many things at once, trying to put them all together, knowing that one member state would say, well, I like A, but don't like B. And another one says, I like C, but don't like B. And then you say, well, yeah, but they all go together. And you're like, all right. But I don't know. That's just me speculating a little bit. It's far too early to know what will happen there, except I think for all of us, the word is just to be patient, and also knowing that because of, I mean, not just because of unanimity, but unanimity encourages, I think, that this taking a long time, because it can be, as we've seen in other files, you can have one or two member states holding it up. I'm not even sure we're at a level yet, at a stage yet, where we know where member states stand on some of these files. So that may become clearer in the Belgian presidency, but we'll see.
Belgium used to have a holding companies regime, didn't they?
I think that's right. Yeah,
there was a Belgian industry that did things like this. I'm wondering if that's going to have that sort of a legacy from that is going to have any impact on their approach, especially to Unshell. I mean, whether they've got some sort of folk memory, this isn't as bad as everybody thinks it is. Okay, so I think BFIT is just trundling along, isn't it, right? And then all those other things are going
to... Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, but I don't think these things... I mean, I would hate to be wrong on this, but I don't think these things will be approved quickly. That's just the sense I get.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got another matter... Faster. And hopefully you're going to tell us that it's not very fast in its implementation.
Well,
and this one
well,
isn't even an acronym, is it?
I mean, it's not, you're right. It's not even really an acronym. It's just a sort of a shorthand for this. It's basically a way to try to get withholding tax refunds issued faster.
Right.
But also done in a more secure way, because we don't want nobody wants a repeat of the Cum-Ex and Cum-Cum scandals. And nor do you want, I'm not even going to try to explain what that is in much detail, except to say that it involves getting multiple refunds for one withholding payment, basically, getting multiple refunds for a tax that's been paid once. That's it.
I've had it explained to me over a beer. I wouldn't have a stab at re-explaining
it. And that's just Cum-Ex. Cum-Cum is slightly different, but scandalous thing. And the two together have, over a 20-year period, cost EU tax authorities, I believe the commission has estimated, 150 billion euros. And so they have put together this proposal to try to streamline at least how this is done. Again, it's one of these things where it sounds good in practice, but putting it into detail sounds good in theory, but then trying to actually put it into practice, reconciling different member state systems that a particular member state says, but our system works well, we don't want to change it, or is complicated. And that was again a measure that the presidency of Spain, I think, wanted to discuss in December, I think it was December, but did not. And again, we will see what the Belgian presidency wants to do with it. I think they said something in their program about dealing with withholding taxes. I do not believe they used the faster shorthand, but it seemed to be that's what they were talking about. So again, we'll see.
Yeah, and so I think it's got three proposed elements at the moment, hasn't it? Which is a common EU digital tax residence certificate, a choice between or a combination of relief at source and quick refund systems,
mm-hmm.
and common reporting. So absolutely no possibility of doubling up with anything that's already in existence there in any way, shape or form. We've got a bit of time on this because the current proposal is for the 1st of January 2027.
Yeah, so there's some...
They've got to build tech architecture of that, though, in that time as well, haven't they?
Possibly, yeah.
This is not just a simple... Introduce a legislation charge of withholding.
GPT to do it.
Well, but ChatGPT would come up with a name like brilliant or fantastic for the next one.
Right.
So that's less impactful, but it will actually make a difference in basically closing this huge gaping hole that was in the system, right? Which I am told. Well, I've been told the German authorities were fully aware of, but then they weren't aware of it when somebody realized how big it was, so that they could blame somebody else. But that's entirely without foundation.
Interesting about faster, going back to the speed at which we do things, is that it was announced in the Commission's 2020 Action Plan on the Capital Markets Union, We got a legislative proposal for a directive in June of this year, and we're expecting it to come in 2027. So for something called FASTER, they're expecting to get that, you know, all tapped down in 7 years, which I quite like as a concept.
Like, yeah. We've got a massive crisis. We need to close this loophole immediately.
Yeah.
We've got a 7-year timetable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, BFIT's not supposed to be in force until 2028, I think. I believe the transfer pricing one is supposed to come into force in 2026. But again, all depends on member states agreeing to it. And as we've seen, even with Pillar 2, these things take longer than was initially planned. You know, yeah. Pillar one is interesting too. I don't know. I'm not even sure if I put that on the list.
No, it's not on the list, but we talked about it before we started, didn't we?
Yeah. I don't want to be over dramatic about it, but this commission official at the end of November talked about there being a flood or an avalanche of digital taxes that will come on board if, you know, that will be implemented if the Pillar One treaty isn't ratified. And the United States, or at least from everything I understand, you know, is probably not going to ratify the Pillar One treaty, or it's what I call the Pillar One treaty. The multilateral convention is what I'm talking about. There seems to be general agreement that the Pillar One cannot work without the United States. The official said, the commission guy said at the end of November that, you know, the EU cannot do this alone without the US, which raised the obvious question, but there was no Q&A period at this event, raises sort of the obvious question, well, what happens with this EU digital tax directive? And the answer that I get from the commission is, well, we're still committed to Pillar One. It's like, well, okay, you know, I was talking to a professor yesterday, and it's like, you better have a plan B. And that's what I think is going to be interesting in the coming months is, you know, there's going to be more talk about what do we do, you know, as it becomes clear that Pillar One, at least in the envisaged form, doesn't happen.
Yeah. So this, the US's approach to this is really odd from my perspective, right? I was talking to somebody who used to work for a large M&E that begins with the letter A, he was saying that company, the thing that they're most frightened of, is a load of digital service taxes, and because they're a nightmare to comply with, not because they don't want to pay them, you know, they don't want to pay them, not because they wouldn't pay them, but because it's such a nightmare to administer. If you're selling to 200 countries and you've got 200 tax returns to file, and you've got to work out which is in which country, and, you know, there'd be a whole set of complex rules about how you divide it between different countries. So Pillar One was supposed to solve that problem for American companies, right?
It was, yeah.
Why is the US so angry about something that's so clearly in their benefit?
I mean, this is the question, but I think there's a, and to be honest, I don't really know. It's said kind of almost as a fact that, you know, the U.S. will not agree to this because of it needs a two-thirds majority in the Senate, and there's so much gridlock that could never happen. But you would think rationally the case could be made, as you were pointing out, Graham, that, hey, this is all designed to protect, you know, our companies, our being the U.S., companies from these digital service taxes that everybody knows are going to start proliferating again if it becomes clear that Pillar One is falling apart. But at least from what I understand, could be wrong, but my understanding is that recognition, that reality, is not moving the needle very much, or is not changing the political calculation, and I don't really know why, but it may be that it's not sort of real yet. I know the U.S. has this consultation on Pillar One that I think think it ended yesterday, actually. You know, maybe that will make the issue a little bit more real. But I think it would have to be later on down the road where, you know, an additional country says, okay, I mean, there's already a bit of a dispute with Canada, but, you know, another country will say, okay, we're implementing a digital tax. What are you going to do? I don't know. It's also a question of legislative priorities. I mean, when I read the news from the United States, this is not the number one issue. So we'll see.
Yeah. So the American element of tax Twitter that I see seems to be very agitated about the whole pillared process.
Yes.
That it's some sort of fiendish European plot to cover up the fact that European economies are not as productive as they should be and drag everybody down with them, pickle Europe's position by allowing it to take tax from everybody. I'm not so sure that's the case. In fact, I don't really know. I don't, Harry, maybe you could explain. The pillared process, the two things, pillar one and pillar two, who are they really for?
In what sense?
Well, the UK is saying it's not going to raise a huge amount of money from pillar two, right?
Right.
Pillar one stops it charging a DST, which would generate quite a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they in favour of those two things? So, it doesn't make sense to me.
I think that it's a little bit a case of this pesky consensus type approach, which means that effectively it's looking at, I used to be told that the best solution was not the perfect solution, but was the solution that you could get everybody to agree to. So possibly there's an element of this being a solution that you can get consensus on. Also, I think there is an element that we've actually got no idea what it's going to do. We've come full circle, haven't we? Because we were talking at the outset about saying, well, people estimate it's going to be this much tax, et cetera, et cetera. And actually, those estimates are frequently very wrong. And I think maybe, you know, we don't know who it's going to be for until we get a few years into it, or even a few decades into it, by which time it will, of course, be something else entirely. So maybe we'll never know.
To a certain extent, I mean, there's so many actors in this scenario. Each M&E is thinking, I don't really want to pay 15%. How do I impact on that rate? Each country is thinking, like everybody who drives fast on the road, everybody else should drive slower so that I can go faster. So they're looking at the permitted ways of affecting rates. It's just a very odd kettle of fish, I think, and we'll be dealing with it for maybe a decade, I think.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a camel, isn't it? And this comes back to my earlier point. It's a horse designed by committee, though. I think, as I've probably said before, knowing horses as I do, I'm fairly sure that the horse designed by a committee is in fact the horse. But either way, it's designed by a committee, and so it's a bit odd and doesn't really work.
Yeah, constantly breaking down, being turned into glue.
Yeah, well, that's certainly not the glue bit, but yeah, constantly breaking down is pretty much my experience, both of international tax provisions and horses.
Yeah. So I mean, we're going to see. Sorry, but just that, you know, it's Pillar Two is going to go live, so to speak, in the EU 1st of January. But I mean, as we know, the US has its own minimum tax that is very different from the EU minimum tax. And so we're sort of all supposed to be on the same page, and we're not.
It has a much better acronym as well, the US one.
Quite judgmental, though. Guilty.
I like it.
that was a Trump administration acronym,
yes.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, I don't know why they didn't go like, we will kill you or something like that would be an alternative. Anyway, so the final point, which I think we've touched on before, is just general reform fatigue. Is there a conveyor belt somewhere in the back office in the commission with yet more directives on, yet more work to be done to root out avoidance and evil people?
That's a good question. The answer, I'm a little hesitant to say no, but the commission's mandate, as it's called, or its term of office, is coming to an end. It will end at the end of October then in 2024, though it could be extended if the new commission is not in place by then, which is a possibility. It happened the last time. and beat, you know, they unveiled BFIT in September. There, as we've been talking about on the show, there are a number of nicely acronymed proposals that are not moving in the council. You wonder, would they just keep adding to the pile or not? But the point is, in the State of the Union address, which is sort of a policy outline speech that the Commission President Ursula von der Leyen gave in September, there was uncharacteristically nothing about tax, which suggests that it may be a little bit less of a priority than it once was, and also that the main, you know, the really big tax files, whether it be Pillar 2, whether it be BFIT, or even Pillar 1, which is, you know, clearly a little bit outside of the hands of the EU, but is another, could be another issue, as I was just talking about, those files have sort of already been, you know, they've either been already put into law or they've been at least given to the council for their, you know, for their consideration. So, yeah, we'll see.
So just to check on this, on how the structures work, the commissions rotate. It has a limited lifespan, and then new commissioners are appointed, right?
Right.
But is there, like, underneath that, is there sort of like a deep state civil service that has it, that could have its own agenda and pushes things forward, gives continuity, like to use a more British version of that, Sir Humphrey from Yes Minister, who always remains and will always be there with the same suggestion despite who the minister is?
I mean, there certainly is a permanent civil service. I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, I know they have a certain influence, they take some political guidance. I mean, they can't, I don't think they can act, you know, too autonomously. Or, I mean, I really don't know the level of autonomy they have, but I mean, I think, but it is ultimately a decision of the commission, which is, while not directly elected, is elected by the European Parliament, if I know the process correctly. And so, I mean, then they are the ones who decide ultimately, I believe, that this is what we are going to do or this is not what we're going to do. So it's in that sense, I mean, I don't know how much of an influence permanent civil servants have, but I mean, they are there certainly, but I don't know if, I mean, but I would be cautious about overstating the influence that they have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Right. So Todd, thank you so much.
Thank you, Graham.
This short episode lasted nearly an hour.
Thanks, Harriet.
Thank you so much for coming back. And hopefully you'll come back next year and we'll have another update and you can tell us that BFIT hasn't moved anywhere and the Unshield Directive is exactly stuck where it was.
But there are new announcements for 17 new proposals, yeah, as well.
A fantastic directive will have been, been published.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you very much for coming. Have a really good Christmas and a great new year. I know you told me earlier on you're not going back to the US, but have a great time in Europe. And Harriet, I think even though we have released our Christmas special, Todd, you may want to listen. It's all about Santa being blacklisted by the EU for non-compliance with CRS. even though we've released our Christmas special, this, I think, will be the last release of the year. So, Harriet, have a lovely Christmas and a happy new year to our listeners. Thank you very much for the support over the last 12 months. It's been absolutely brilliant to be here and talk to all the great people we've got. Our mini series will be coming in the first month of next year.
It will, Harriet. You say that like it's somehow being delayed by me. What's delaying it is that the fantastic guests that we have coming in our new series on designing the perfect international tax system are very busy because they are so fantastic.
And designing the international tax system.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, so we're all looking forward to that. The tax community of the world are agog waiting for that to be released. Thank you very much for coming, Todd.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Speak very soon. Thank you very much.
Happy holidays. Bye.